Hey everyone, super excited that you're joining us for this thought leadership series, TechRx, your prescription for tomorrow's healthcare device challenges. We're diving into DevOps for devices, helping innovators at companies in healthcare have a guide to enterprise fleet transformation. I'm so excited to this step-by-step guide with these interviews that we're doing in partnership with Esper, so you could transform your devices and fleet. For more resources on how you could do this and make it happen for your organization, go to outcomesrocket.health/Esper. That's E-S-P-E-R, outcomesrocket.health/Esper. Hope you enjoy the series. Today, I have the privilege of hosting Rowan Armstrong on this podcast. He is the CEO of BioLiberty. Rowan has an incredible background in engineering, in entrepreneurship, and is doing strong work in the area of stroke and robotics. And I'm excited to host him as part of this series. So Rowan, such a pleasure to have you here on the podcast today. Thanks for joining us.
Pleasure to be here. So thanks for the introduction.
Absolutely. So look, you've done super interesting things, including funding your way through college with a photography business. And now you're doing such incredible things with your company, BioLiberty. So tell us about yourself and tell us about BioLiberty.
Of course, to start off from the beginning, I was born and raised in Ireland. And then I moved over to Scotland to study, which is actually where I met my good friend and now co-founder, Ross O'Hanlon, who supported me with that photography career and is now supporting me with this stroke rehabilitation technology career that I find myself in now. The story of BioLiberty actually kicked off in the first COVID-19 lockdown when Ross gave me a phone call. We started talking about his current situation at home, and unfortunately Ross's auntie has MS. And it's reached a stage where it was severely impacting her ability to complete day-to-day tasks. And that's where Ross pitched his idea of creating technology which empowers people to move again using soft robots. And with not a lot else to do during COVID-19 lockdowns, I'm sure everyone can relate to that, we started building these rough and ready prototypes, mailing to them each other remotely. And the aim of these prototypes was to encourage movement. And it was in those early days, actually, talking to patients, that we found this huge problem that we could start with solving. And that problem was that neuro rehabilitation doses are typically too low, and they're often delivered too late to allow maximum recovery potential. So 3 years later, we're here now, and with support from an amazing network of patients and leading clinicians and our fantastic team, we're getting ready to launch LifeGlove, which is what we call our soft robotic glove, and our virtual therapy environment. And as you said, we're now focused on upper limb rehabilitation for stroke patients.
That's brilliant. I really appreciate you sharing the background, your inspiration to healthcare, which was, it sounds like it was your partner, Ross's aunt. And this need, right? It's a big need that people need to act faster if they're going to have the proper rehabilitation. How is what you guys do different than what's available today? And is there anything like this available in the market today?
It's a good question. And there's lots of neuro rehabilitation technology available on the market, and that includes robotic solutions. And we had to work really closely with providers and thought leaders in this space to find a few reasons why a lot of this technology does sit in cupboards and doesn't get used anywhere near enough. We kept walking into these clinics and seeing all this amazing technology that like 10 years of development behind it just sitting locked away. And we were really just trying to figure out why. And it really is a lack of focus for that technology and the integration of it into clinical workflows. So that's where we've put all our resource. And when it comes to stroke rehabilitation, the technology needs to fit so seamlessly into their day-to-day operations in order to really deliver a higher rehabilitation dose at that earlier stage. And what does that actually mean when it comes to product development, the first thing that we looked at was a really seamless process of using the glove, taking it on and off, donning and doffing is what we call it behind closed doors. And the second one is for the virtual therapy environment, it needs to be extremely intuitive to use. This includes setting up a therapy program for a patient, exporting reports for those to be used to show progress for reimbursement purposes, whatever that looks like. It needs to be really integrated. I think interoperability is a huge topic right now within healthcare. And that's something we've really seen. If they require to hire two extra staff members in order to use technology, that's just not going to happen, especially when you're trying to paint a picture where this technology is going to reduce costs. And that's just not going to work. So I think that's where we do fundamentally differ in our attitude towards other players.
Love that. Thank you for that, Rowan. Sounds like you guys are obsessed with the user experience and also the workflows, which is oftentimes where a lot of technologies fall off or sit on the shelf, collect dust, become doorstops. In many occasions, your glove is innovative, and these types of technologies don't happen by themselves. Partnerships are a key thing. Have you had any exciting partnerships develop in your journey so far?
Absolutely, loads. It's hard to think to pull out a few, but at this point, we're very proud to have engaged with over half of the top 30 stroke rehabilitation clinics in the US. Those relationships come in lots of different flavors. Some of these clinics have become early adopters, research partners for clinical validation studies that are currently ongoing, even just clinics who've offered us feedback and support in developing our product. If we find a provider that's willing to give us some really tough feedback and really get stuck into the technology in a productive way, that we always try to stay in touch with them. When we walk in and people say, oh yeah, this is nice, this is really good, that's not what we're looking for at this stage, because we do have the tools to make this even better. And so that's what those partnerships with providers might look like. When it comes to partnerships for deploying the technology, I think, well, Esper is a really good example there of a company that has been great to partner with, because we specialize in providing the next generation of neuro rehabilitation technology to clinics. But when it comes to things like device fleet management and other elements like that, there are companies out there who've really nailed it. and we can rely on them to tick that box for us. And then we can stick to the thing that we're really good at in the neuro rehabilitation front. And then with this type of product, an exoskeleton robotic glove, which can affect grip strength, we've also had some wacky conversations with people trying to combat hand fatigue. I'll never forget when the providers of beef for McDonald's approached us and asked for a version of their glove for their workers who have to chop up so much beef that their hands were getting really tired. And from a That's company vision perspective, it was unexpected. And those conversations happen all the time, but it's that type of technology where people hear about it and they think, oh, you could use it to do that. You could use it for my tennis. In fact, Princess Anne wanted to use it for her horse riding when we spoke to her. And that wasn't the, in terms of a beachhead market, I'm not sure if Princess Anne is that, but
yeah. I'd say pretty cool though. Man, and so I remember it was like 8-9 years ago, we started hearing the beginnings of exoskeletons. It's a very innovative technology that I think its time has come. Your innovative product here uses robotics. Could you share more about how it works?
Of course, yeah. So when we were designing LifeGlove and the virtual therapy environment, the first port of call for us was trying to cover as much of the rehabilitation continuum as possible. Rehabilitation continuum being the journey from day one through to full recovery, hopefully. And what I mean by that is the therapies that we've integrated into the technology are tailored to the stage and specific needs for the patient. And this helps me describe how the technology works because I can take out one of our therapy modes, which is our active therapy mode. That can support patients at a very early stage of rehabilitation for moderate to severe strokes. Essentially what happens is a patient will be wearing the glove and it will sense a very small movement from the patient and then it will complete that movement for them. Nice. And we call that early stage mobilization. And that process can help avoid the development of tone and spasticity by opening up the hand fully and completing their passive range of motion. And the clever part is that the algorithms we've developed track all of this. The robot can tell how much assistance it had to provide to complete the movement and compare that to the level of input from the patient. And this paints a really nice picture of how patients are progressing in their rehab journey, which is good for motivation. We've seen patients look at these graphs, whether it's maybe slightly plateauing or maybe it's exponential and it's growing really quickly. And that could be a big motivating factor. And it can also help clinicians make really good decisions around the next steps of therapy. And so that's just the last thing around how our, you talked about exoskeletons. And I think when we say the word exoskeleton, we think like stiff, hard, plastic, metal based. And I think that's for you. Maybe you've seen like Terminator, for example. That's how we picture traditional robots. But one thing that we noticed in the early days was that the human body is made of soft tissue. And why don't we make our robots soft too? And that's why all our robots are textile based, air driven, all pneumatic, which makes them much more compliant with the human body. And it makes it a lot less intimidating. I think if you were to compare Terminator to Big Hero 6, I don't know if you've seen Big Hero 6.
Yeah, I have. Yeah. I got a 7-year-old, so I've seen Big
Of course. Hero 6. Great movie,
it's
by the way.
Movie. I love it.
But it actually depicts soft robots really well compared to traditional ones. And we've seen that similar attitude in clinics where a patient is presented with a soft robot versus a traditional one. And yeah, that's one of the big priorities for us is to make it more comfortable.
That's fantastic. Yeah, Bainmax is fantastic. And for those of you that haven't seen the movie, he is the fluffy nursing robot that Rowan referred to. And I think it's a great parallel. And speaking about how users interact with the device, tell us a little bit about it. Do they just put it on or how does that work?
That is a good question because I think some of the assumptions in the beginning were, yes, someone would just put it on. But the process of putting it on has become a huge priority for us. And that's due to tone and spasticity. Because even putting on a basic glove is a huge challenge for stroke patients. We've really had to think outside the box so that the glove can be assembled around the hand easily so that we don't eat into the already limited therapy time that clinicians have with patients. And we see this sort of high tone, high spasticity where the muscles are contracted and pulling the fingers in, pulling the wrist in. And that makes for quite a difficult starting position for assembling that glove. So that has been a huge design challenge for us. Now, in terms of how the user interacts with it, one thing I haven't mentioned yet is LifeHub, which is a pretty key component to our solution. And it's a box that sits in front of the patient with a screen on it and allows the patient to engage with games and other interactive experiences to make everything more engaging. So LifeHub can sit in front of the patient and allow clinicians to have potentially multiple patients carrying out therapy at the same time. So you're starting to increase the efficiency of these flows within clinics. And then one of our other therapy modes is actually giving clinician complete control over the glove. So LifeHub now faces them and they can control the opening and closing of the glove so that the patient can complete functional tasks in the industry known as ADLs, which are activities of daily living. And those are so key to getting patients back to independent living. They're trying to simulate these day-to-day tasks that they'd be completing in the home, for example.
Yeah, that's really great. No, thanks for sharing that with us. And really, when you think about the data side, there's a lot of interesting ways that devices can do processing on site versus the cloud. Can you share a little bit more about what you're doing here?
Of course, yeah. So we actually do a mix of the two. A lot of our algorithms are embedded locally on the device. And that means we can give that real-time feedback to the patient and the clinician whilst the therapy is going on. But then we send all this processed data to the cloud. And this is where we can start summarizing it into reports and maybe even start looking for trends in that data. And that's why I think it's really important to have a really neat and tidy cloud infrastructure. If we ever want to do some predictive analysis, therapy recommendations in the future, we need to make sure the data has been stored securely and then anonymized, anonymized manner. And then we can start thinking big about how that data can be used. And I've seen, just on the topic of the cloud infrastructure, when it comes to building a portal that's driven off that data and those insights, we've seen so many clinician portals from companies. And it's actually gotten to a point where we mention the word clinician portal and the clinician looks startled and feared at the thought of having to remember another login. And that's where the whole integration and interoperability is key when it comes to these sorts of platforms and giving people access to everything that you have within your cloud infrastructure, but in a way that doesn't mean that they have to remember another password and have another step in their workflows.
Yeah, for sure. That's a great call. And back to the obsession on the experience of the clinician and the patient, right? Being super, super keen on making that smooth is vital. We're talking devices, we're talking software, both of them integrated, deployments in the hospital, possibly in the home. How do you see devices playing a role in your future roadmap? And how are you thinking about your device strategy? Because this could get complicated.
Yeah, it absolutely could. And it does. It does. I said, there's only so much I can reveal here on that future roadmap. But it's safe to say that Life Hub and Life Glove are only a starting point in our roadmap. The cool thing about soft robotics is that when they get larger, they generate larger levels of force. And what that means for us is that the technology lends itself well to being scaled up to other parts of the body. And as I mentioned before, we want to cover as much of that rehabilitation continuum as possible. So integrating as much of the human body as possible makes complete sense. And then when it comes to Life Hub and the virtual therapy environment, we're currently focused on inpatient and outpatient settings, but this is very much a stepping stone towards moving our technology into the home. We hear a lot of conversation about hospitals and home-based care. It's been a huge talking point over the last few years. And I suppose our goal is to generate enough evidence in that clinical setting to justify the deployment of our technology in the home setting. And we want to get the backing of providers, insurers, and all the other stakeholders before we make that move. And you can imagine how the number of devices that would be deployed in that situation where we actually manage to send it home with patients, every stroke patient, so they can continue that rehabilitation continuum into the home. And I do love a bit of blue sky thinking. And for our devices, for our technology, I think that physical therapy is only really one part of the puzzle. And if you're thinking about making a full recovery post-stroke, clinicians have to consider cognitive therapy, speech therapy, and so many other elements of recovery. And our goal as a company is to support those clinicians as much as we can to increase that rehabilitation dose much earlier. And I think we can't really ignore those other elements of therapy forever. And I think we have to build all these other elements into our future roadmap.
That's great. No, thank you for that, Rowan. And there are a lot of listeners here also developing technologies, solutions, looking for ways to scale. Any ideas that you'd like to share on thinking about that device strategy? Best way to go about it?
Oh, think big to start with and then bring it back to the clinicians, the customers, the people who have helped you so far in identifying that first product. You'd be so surprised when you ask someone to just draw out their dream device or their dream platform. And after all their experiences within an occupational therapist, for example, and we've actually got into rehabilitation clinics before and asked a junior clinician to do this. And some of the ideas that they come up with are amazing, absolutely amazing, because those are the people that are doing it. Like, we're not in that stroke rehabilitation clinic every day. And it's so important. And yeah, although you get some wacky ideas there as well.
Yeah, I'm sure.
But no, that's what I'd recommend. Yeah.
Some great recommendations there, Ron. Thank you. Look, phenomenal tech. Love everything that you've shared, from the inspiration to why you guys are doing this, the partnerships and the nuances around workflow. Is there anything else you'd like to share here before we conclude?
Not much. So I'll just thank you very much for having me. And anyone who wants to reach out, any of those innovators that you're talking about, any providers who want to have a conversation, or anyone who's interested, please reach out on our website. And yeah, thank you very much for the great questions. It's been an absolute pleasure.
It's a pleasure to have you here, Rowan. And for everybody listening, thanks for jumping in again on this series, Tech RX. There's so many challenges that you could be faced with as you look to evolve healthcare for all of us. Think about the recommendations Rowan left us with, and stay tuned for the rest of our series. You're going to have a blast learning and listening. Rowan, thanks again.
Thank you.